in concert and presented to you Wednesday at 1 during the lunch half hour. So listen up, in concert, you too. The words and music of you too.
Every Holiday Inn looks the same, you know. It's like a McDonald's hamburger. But there is more to America than McDonald's.
Part 2 of U2 Days, Wednesday at 1, exclusively on 89.3 FM WNUR.
From U2, I'm the singer. Just listen to WNUR Evanston. It's great.
This is Backstage on WNUR. I'm Mike Leb, and today on Backstage, the Irish band U2. We talked to singer Bono when the band was here in America on its first tour, promoting the debut album, Boy. Today, the words and music of U2. This is the latest single called I Will Follow. The members of U2 are Bono, singer, and a guitarist who goes by the name The Edge, bassist Adam Clayton, and drummer Larry. The band got together in 1975 when its oldest member was barely a teenager. Larry, the drummer, began things by drafting a reluctant Bono into the band.
Larry hassled me. Yeah. I remember he walked up and he was all I remember him in school was a sort of incredibly good-looking kid who had all the girls running around after him and who wasn't interested. You know what I mean? Like, he was that sort of, you know, and he was only, he would have been 14 at the time, you know? And he came up and he said, look, well, come down, you know? We met in his kitchen. They sort of moved the fridge out of the way. And there was a few of us. There was The Edge and his brother, who's in a group called The Virgin Prunes. And we thought, yeah, it'd be... This is now 1975. And he said, let's play. And none of us could play, right? But he could. Larry could. Larry started just... He'd done military drumming and things like that. We all went... what's going on here, you know? This arrogant little 14 and a half year old who, you know, has all the girls running after him as a musician, or looks like he could be one. So it also sounded like fun, because you do actually get a buzz off. We got one amplifier and one speaker and we plugged everything into it. And I don't know, do you have a motorbike?
No.
Well, I kind of like, my brother had motorbikes at the time, and if you get on a big motorbike, you put up the accelerator like that, gives a real sort of buzz in your elbow. But when you hit a chord, at least when I hit a chord for the first time on an electric guitar, I got that big buzz. And I thought, wow, this is, you know, you could knock walls down with this.
What did you start with? Kind of music was it at the beginning?
Well, we didn't know real type of music. I'd been listening. I got a Beach Boys record. Beach Boys Live is something. All I remember was I always remember feeling that I liked the 60s music, whereas I didn't like the 70s. I'd liked Mark Bowie and T-Rex and that sort of Bowie-Roxy thing, but nothing much else. But I liked the 60s thing. And so I got a thing called High Tide Green Grass. I had that. It's an early Stones album thing. We tried to try and play other people's material, but we weren't good at it. And one thing I had always, maybe it was just arrogance, but I'd always believed that I could write material like these people. And I just, if I just played a chord on the guitar, I could sing over it and it would actually sound good. And so from very early on, we started to write our own material. And that's immediately separated us from everybody else. And we started off in Dublin. You had a situation where we were 18 years old, and our audience, who were our own age, couldn't get in to see us because we were playing pubs. And the real irony of the situation was that we were underage and we were in there playing, and all our audience was outside banging on the doors, and there was some real sort of aggressive scenes in places in Dublin where people were, you know, trying to break the door down to get in and things like that. It was very exciting, though. I love Dublin. I think Dublin is a great place.
How did you make the jump from Dublin? And I understand, I guess you went to London and recorded the single there.
No. I'll tell you what happened. I got on a boat. I had £50 and I got on a boat and went to London to give in this four-track demo tape that I had to each people in the music paper, because I was very mistrustful of music papers and I wanted to see how they'd react early on to us. And I wanted to confront them with U2, apart from going through a record company, because I thought going through a record company to people makes them a wee bit mistrusted. Am I right, fella? You know, it can do.
Yeah.
But it can do, depending. I mean, Ireland are different, as I think Warners are here. But so I did this personally, just delivered the four tapes to some people who really liked that tape. That was the seed that started to grow. Then we recorded a single in Ireland, which was really a demo for CBS, who wanted to sign us at the time. They wouldn't give us the deal that we wanted, but we used their demo tapes to release a single called U2-3. That was distributed around England to various people who started to talk about it and write about it and shout about it. So there was interest for us to play in England and in London. So quite naturally, we played there.
How long ago was this?
This is a year ago. A year and a half ago. So we went over and played Christmas 1979. And there was a lot of interest. Eventually, if you like, we got a recording contract with Ireland. We recorded the album Boy in Dublin and was sent over here, and a lot of people got very interested over here, and Warners got very enthusiastic about it and said, well, why don't we play over here? There's people who want to hear us. I was here, you over here, so that's why we're here.
Did you expect it to be that fast?
It's quite simple.
Yeah.
I'm very pleased that things are growing as fast as they are, because I can't stand standing still. When you start to stand still, you start to stagnate.
That was another time, another place. U2 have a distinctive sound, and much of it comes from the guitars, and it's based on sort of a highly distorted, echoey lead riff. Bono talked about the sound and its creator, The Edge.
Edge is, I call him a mathematical guitar player, because he doesn't play guitar the way that most people do. He's that sort of person where he thinks about things. It's like he's like the head of the band, right? I'm sort of the heart of the band, in the sense that I'll make a fool of myself, I'll fall. And Adam and Larry are the feet. My respect for The Edge just grows and grows every day. He is a genius. He is somebody who's a very, very high IQ. He's a very clever person, and he knows what he's doing. And he's got what great guitar players should have, which is underemphasis. He doesn't have to show off. He doesn't have to, you know, he underplays things a lot of the time. And he just, mind you, we had to feed him the right records, because we gave him things like Marquee Moon early on. You know, because now this he's 17 at the time, and he would just listen to the guitar players he liked, and just he threw out everybody else that he didn't like. He's developed a very angular type of guitar style that has no waste, I don't think. I don't want to sound too arrogant to you, but you must understand that I believe in, you know, 100% in The Edge as I do in the band. And I want to get that across.
You two have been touring the country non-stop for the past few months. They've succeeded, but it's been a grueling time for the young band. Bono gave his impressions of playing America, a country so different from Ireland, and so much bigger.
Like living in a Big Mac. It's every Holiday Inn looks the same, yeah. You know? It's like a McDonald's hamburger. But there is more to America than McDonald's.
Bono is quick to describe his observations on America, but hesitates when asked about his songwriting.
I don't really like to describe what songs are about, because, like, in the sound, we're trying to get across a cinema type of sound, like a very a big screen sound. I was talking to the young lady on my left about this earlier on, a film, but it's like a big screen sound. In many ways, the lyrics that I use are like pictures as well. Like, I don't tell stories, so it would be wrong for me to try and express meaning. A Day Without Me is a title that evoked
death to me. And that's what I was just thinking about it, but not in a gloomy way. I was just thinking, oh, what would it be like if I actually wasn't around? You know, if this was a death of hell, you know.
U2's distinctive sound has been winning over audiences all across the country. They played 2 dates at Chicago, one at a club packed with hardcore fans, the other at the University of Chicago, before an audience that came more out of curiosity than love for the band.
What I was impressed with last night was the fact that, and this is very important to us, that we were playing to an audience who basically didn't know who the hell we were, right? And they were making up their mind before our eyes, and I can see them making up their mind, right? And I'm seeing it dawn on them that the music isn't what they see. See, they think, you know, young band from England, Ireland area, album cover, they're a new wave band. And so they put us up with old Blondie and or The Police or other bands that they associate as being new wave. We're not a new wave band, you know, we're not a new wave band. We're not a punk band. I don't know what the hell we are, but we're you too. And it starts to dawn on them that we're individual and that whatever they've thought about, you know, their preconceptions where they were wrong. And it's a very satisfying process.
That was Out of Control from the debut album Boy. This has been Backstage with guest Bono from U2. Many thanks to Bob Orlowski. This is Mike Lev for Backstage on WNUR.